Well, good morning. Good to be here with you guys. I recently heard this old joke, and I thought it was pretty funny, so I thought I'd share it with you guys. You guys might not think it's funny, but here goes. This guy decides to go to New York City, and he wants to go to Carnegie Hall. He wants to see a performance there. And so he goes to New York, saves his money, gets enough to go, and he goes to New York City, and he gets there, and he ends up getting lost. Ran into a bit of a problem, getting lost in New York City. How about that, huh? And so then he's looking around, he doesn't know what to do, and he thinks, you know what, I think what I'll do is just, I'll find a native New Yorker, and I'll ask him for directions. So he looked around, and he sees this hot dog vendor, and he goes, he's got to be a native New Yorker. So he walks up to him, and he says, excuse me, sir, can you tell me, how can I get to Carnegie Hall? And the guy looks at him and says, practice, my friend, practice. Is that good? Is that not true? Practice, practice, practice. Sometimes to get to where we're going, it takes practice. It takes us doing something over and over and over until we get it down, until it becomes kind of second nature to us. You know, I must confess to you, there's a time that I've even got up on the weekend, a day off, and I plan to go somewhere, and the route that I take starts me off in the same route as I take to work. And the next thing I know, I'm like an autopilot and I'm cruising to work. Have you guys ever done that? You ever been there? Yeah, that's right. Oh, it's frustrating to me, you know, but the power of practicing something, of doing something over and over, it's pretty crazy how powerful that can be. And even on a more serious note, this idea of practicing something, you know, I thought of a time that really resonated with me, and it was the day the AIR campaign started for Desert Storm. That was in January 17th of 1991. I was a young buck sergeant in the Air Force, and I was deployed to Saudi Arabia, and I was assigned to an aircraft, and my job was to make sure that that plane was ready to go at a moment's notice. And so on the morning of the 17th, just right after midnight, the commander called us together, and he stood up on this trailer. He got us all gathered around him, and he said, boys, tonight the AIR campaign starts. Tonight we launch our jets. It was just kind of quiet, and then all my buddies and I, we turned around, and we went back to our jets, get them ready to go. And as I walked back, I thought how weird that felt. Felt kind of weird to me. I thought, you know, that I thought I'd have different feelings. I thought I'd feel kind of noble, somehow more nobler in the act of launching our jets out, but I didn't. I didn't feel that way, not at all. I felt like it was just another one of those countless training exercises that we did back in the States. And then it hit me. I realized that it felt that way to me because all this training that I had been doing was to prepare me for this moment so that I could do exactly what I'd been trained to do, and I could do it like clockwork. It's funny, it's like that day a light went off in my head, and I just, you know, training, the importance of it. You cannot overestimate the value of training. It is so true. And Jesus understood the value of training. And that's why he invested so heavily into the 12 disciples. You see, they were to accompany him. They were to learn from what he was teaching. Because eventually they were going to be sent out on their own to go preach and to cast out demons. And the choice of training his inner circle of guys, this inner ring of disciples, was a vital part of his mission. The task of spreading the word about Jesus was going to rest on these 12 men. So it was important. But honestly, I wondered about the 12. I wondered if they were kind of like me when I was this young buck sergeant. I was clueless, Ron. I was clueless. And I wondered if they were, you know. Oh, I was really glad to be on the team. Don't get me wrong. I was glad I was on the team. I just didn't really understand the full weight of all the training that I had received. I was just kind of there, kind of going through the motions. And with our passage today, we're going to get a glimpse into what Jesus is doing with his disciples, some practical application training that he's doing with his disciples. And up until this time, you know, they had been walking with Jesus. They had been watching him teaching, healing the sick, and casting out demons. And I kind of like to think of that as classroom training. They'd been, you know, they'd been soaking it all in. They'd been watching the master teach, but now they were going to have to hit the streets. Now they were going to have to put their training into action. It was time for them to get their hands dirty, so to speak. And if they were going to do this, they were going to have to trust in Jesus. And now they were going to be given an opportunity to practice what they had been learning. And so with that, let's look at our passage. It's Mark 6. It's verses 6 through 13. And then Jesus went around teaching from village to village, calling the 12 to himself. He began to send them out two by two and gave them authority over impure spirits. And these were his instructions. Take nothing for the journey except a staff. No bread, no bag, no money in your belt. Wear sandals, but not an extra shirt. Whenever you enter a house, stay there until you leave that town. And if any place doesn't welcome you or listen to you, leave that place. Shake the dust off of your feet as a testimony against them. They went out and they preached that people should repent. They drove out many demons and they anointed many sick people with oil and they healed them. And so Jesus had just left Nazareth where he'd been rejected by his own hometown, and then he begins to go throughout Galilee, village by village. He's teaching. You know, he's on a circuit. He's moving with purpose. In fact, this is his third time back in Galilee, and at some point, he calls his disciples together, just like he did when he had appointed them. We read that back in Mark 3. And you know, in my mind, I can just imagine Jesus calling them together and setting them down, and then he goes, guys, You remember what I told you when I called you to follow me? Well, now it's time. Now it's time. There's a seriousness in Jesus' tone. So when you think about Jesus calling the 12, don't think of it as something like, hey, guys, come here. Come over here, Ben. I got something I want to tell you. You know, when you read the NIV, you can kind of get that impression. I kind of got that impression when I first read it. Calling is a bit vague. It kind of loses some of its weight, but I like how the New American Standard puts it. It says that Jesus summoned the disciples. And I like that better. Summon means to call authoritatively. It means to urgently call somebody to be present. And I think this really captures the thought better. I mean, think about when a court summons someone. If you've ever been summoned by a court before, I have. I hate to say that. Then you know it's not something that you mess around with. You don't mess around with it. There's a seriousness in the tone. And so Jesus had been carefully preparing these disciples for this very mission that he's about to send them out on. Remember, he had called them with a promise of making them fishers of men. And so now was the time for them to be sent out. It's go time. And so Jesus sits these guys down and he gives them authority over unclean spirits. And he gives them specific instructions on how they're to operate when they're out in the field. And Jesus gives them authority, and he indicates that the 12 have become more than just these mere disciples of a teacher. When he's given them authority, he's saying, you're more than that. Now you're participants in my own mission as a herald of God's rule. And the 12 were Christ's ambassadors. They were commissioned by him. They were empowered by him to go wherever he sent them to serve. There's no time for these disciples to mess around. They got to go. They couldn't be weighed down with all kinds of provisions that they thought they might need for their journey. Things that anyone of that day, even our day, would think you might need when you travel. Jesus told them to take nothing but a walking stick. They couldn't even bring any food, an overnight bag, or even their wallet. He just told them to go. There was no time to get an extra pair of shoes. They couldn't change their clothes. They'd have to go with the clothes that were on their backs. And whenever they got to where it was, they were going. If they were invited in a house, then they were to stay at that house. They weren't to impose on the hospitality of lots of different people. They weren't to look for better accommodations once they got settled into that town. Right? They were the first place that he accepted them. They were to make that their base of operation. And then if they got to a village and they didn't want to accept them, they weren't willing to listen, they were to leave that place. They were to shake the dust off of their feet as a testimony against them. And Jesus was telling the 12, you know, that it's like he's telling them, you know, you're going to get some places and some people aren't going to want to hear what you have to say. You're going to face some rejection. And so you better get ready for it. This shaking the dust off of their feet seems kind of odd to us, at least it did to me, but you know, those who would have seen this done knew exactly what the disciples were saying in their actions. You see, pious Jews, as they would travel from town to town, if they went through a Gentile city, when they got to the other side, they'd take their shoes off and they would kind of shake the dust off of it. And they were, with that action, they were saying that we're separating ourselves from you, from your influences and from your beliefs and your practices. You know, it would have been a vivid, the disciples doing this same thing with their own people would have been a vivid sign of Jesus telling them to remain separate from those folks, from the people that were rejecting his message. I mean, the significance of that act is to make it clear that those who rejected Jesus' message, that they were going to have to answer for themselves. It would have been a hard-hitting message. And then you think about it for a moment. You know, I put myself in the shoes of the disciples. I had a guy come up to me after first service and said, Jim, I think it's put your feet in their sandals, right? But I tried to put myself in their place and thought about, man, what is that? What would I have been like? And I got to confess, you know, I think my head would have been spinning. It would have been spinning. I mean, think about it. What do you mean? Go to a town and take no money with me. Leave it behind. Just go. I can't imagine telling me, Jim, go to Hutch. Don't worry about how you're going to get there or what money you're going to have. Just go. Somebody will take you in and stay there. It's crazy to me. And what about the urgency? You know, why do I got to leave like right now? I don't get that. And then only take what I've got on my back? I do have other clothes. I'd like to pack an overnight bag. And then go to a new city go to a new city, somewhere that I've never been, and then trust that when I get there, that I'm going to have a place to stay. I don't even know where I'm going. And not only that I'm going to be fed. What am I going to eat? And then you tell me when I get there, Jesus, gosh, I'm not trying to be stubborn here, but I just don't get it. When I get here, I'm going to have confrontation with people? Jesus, you know me. I hate confrontation. I can't stand it. And then you want me to go by myself? You mean I got to leave you? I got to do this on my own? You know, those are just some of the questions that I thought about if I was in their shoes. It just flooded my mind as I thought about this passage. How would I respond to that? And maybe the disciples had these same kinds of questions. Maybe. But on the other hand, the disciples had seen Jesus move in some pretty miraculous ways. They'd seen him move in impossible ways, right? They'd seen him calm a storm. They'd seen him heal the sick, raise the dead. Powerful stuff they'd seen him do. So I could see the disciples trusting Jesus, but on the same hand, I can also see him being fearful of stepping out. And maybe the disciples felt that way, maybe. I mean, we don't know. But we can't forget that the disciples weren't these superhuman beings. They were really just average people, just like you and I. And so that means that probably they had some of the same fears and some of the same thoughts that you and I would have. Maybe that's why Jesus sent them out two by two. You know, it's a common sense approach. It makes sense. It ensured that they'd have companionship, that there'd be mutual support going on. They would have been encouraged. I know I would have been encouraged if I had a partner go with me. But there is one thing that we know for sure, for certain, is that they went out. They went out two by two, and they healed the sick. They casted out demons, and they preached repentance. And the disciples' decision to act was crucial to their training and development. For this mission to be effective, they had to fully trust Jesus. And really, to me, that's what the passage, the lesson is for us. It's to trust. So think about it for a minute. To move out with Jesus' instruction, it would have required absolute trust. Trust in God to supply for all of your needs. You might even say this training was designed to teach them to trust God for their physical needs. The disciples would have to trust God moment by moment for their provisions each night. Trusting God's care rather than their own. And in doing this, the 12 learned that Jesus' power extended beyond his personal presence. Did you hear that? Think about that for a minute. He wasn't with them. They were by themselves. That's a powerful lesson. By putting their faith and obedience into action, they were demonstrating that the kingdom of God had come in power. Well, I was putting this together, you know, I was kind of thinking through this, and I thought maybe when we get to this point, maybe people will go, okay, Jim, I get it. I get it. That's pretty cool. But so what? So what? What's it got to do with me? What's it got to do with me? Well, I want you to know it has everything to do with you. It has everything to do with me. But first, we got to make sure we're looking at it the right way. This passage is descriptive. It's not prescriptive. Okay, don't think that after reading this, that you need to leave tomorrow, that you need to go head out with only the shirt on your back and not a penny to your name and move to Montana, because that's not what the passage is saying. That'd be foolish. This passage is just looking into the lives of Jesus' inner circle. And it's telling us what he was doing to train and to develop his disciples, to develop his team. In fact, later on in Luke's gospel, Jesus would say to the same group of guys, listen to that. When I sent you out to preach the good news and you didn't have money, a traveling bag, or an extra pair of sandals, did you need anything? And what they said, no, no. And then listen to what Jesus said. But now take your money and a traveling bag. And if you don't have a sword, sell your cloak and buy one. Isn't that interesting? No, this passage in Mark that we're looking at today is about Jesus building up the faith of the men that he chose to carry his message. It's about Jesus training men to trust him, to put their faith and obedience into action. And that's the application for us today, is to trust Jesus. Like the disciples, I mean, we all share in this mutual human condition. And that's that we've all fallen short. We're all broken. We're all in need of a Savior. We all struggle with fears and doubts and worries. And I believe that the root of all of these come down to this. Who are you going to trust? Who are you going to trust? Yourselves or God? It's a great question to wrestle with. It's a great question to wrestle with. You know, it's easy to be driven by fear of rejection, fear of being made to look like a fool. Nobody wants to look like a fool. And when this happens, many times we begin to trust in, it's kind of like our default, we begin to trust in our own abilities to get us out of those types of situations. We begin to trust in material things. We find safety in them rather than we do in God. But the reality is that we're really pretty limited in how much we do control. We think we control a bunch, but we really don't. We make ourselves out to be a lot bigger than what we actually are. And you know what? I understand this. I do. I mean, we all have desires for comfort, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, we want to make sure that we take care of ourselves and our families, and we want to make sure our physical needs are met in ways that are satisfying. But many times we tend to want to do it on our own. And you know what? When we do it without God's help and direction, we're messing up. Because we tend to want to handle it in two different ways. We always go to extremes. We either become monastic and we say, I'm just doing away with all physical comforts in my life. And we try to live the most austere life we possibly can. Or we go the other way and we just become absolutely absorbed with saturating our lives with comfort. And both of those approaches are wrong. Terry's talked about that the last few weeks a little bit. It's wrong. It's devastating when the results that can come from a life lived like that. But there is a right way, and that's to trust God in all things. Trust Him in all things. Paul said that he could do all things through Him who strengthens me. You know, he wasn't talking about this inner fortitude inside, this, I call it, bulldogging my way through. He's not talking about that. You know, that sometimes we think we can just bulldog our way through and we can handle anything that life throws at us. We can do it on our own. Pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps. That wasn't what he was talking about. Instead, his strength for everything. Think of that for a minute. Everything. What is that? That's everything, right? that lay in the one who continually empowered him. And we need to set our mind just like Paul. And we need to trust in the one that is all-powerful, that is in control of all situations. You see, our passage today really, in a sense, says that there is one that has authority in your life. One who knows the number of your days. One who knows the very fear and doubt that's troubling your soul right now. The one who is the very giver of life. The very one that we should be focusing our trust and our minds on. And he does want you to trust him. He wants you to trust him. And you can. You can put your faith into action. And you can train yourself to trust. You can do this. But to do this, we've got to submit ourselves to his training. You know, if we're going to live a life that's freed from this human condition that we're all in, then we've got to become an apprentice of Jesus. So think about it for a moment. What does it mean to be an apprentice of someone? You become a student of that person. For example, you know, a young man who wants to be an electrician doesn't just get up in the morning and strap his leather work belt on and get his electrical pliers and stick them in his leather belt, and all of a sudden he's an electrician. It doesn't work that way. No, he follows a fully qualified electrician around. He enrolls in classes. He becomes an apprentice. He watches the master electrician work. He asks him questions. And he wrestles really with the difficulties of his trade. And he does the things that will sharpen his skills. And he does them over and over and over again until it becomes repetition to him. Until he masters the disciplines of his trade. And then one day, after many hours of being an apprentice, he's an electrician. He knows what to do when he finds himself on the job site all by himself. His trade has become second nature to him. And you know what? I like this example because training is not simply learning a bunch of facts. It's so much more than that. In so many more ways, it's about doing. It's about putting what you've learned into action. You know, that young man, he may know the theory of electricity, but that's not going to keep him from getting stung by 110 volts of electricity. No, his consistent time with the master electrician, getting his mind and his body ready for the job through repetition over a long period of time is what allows this young man to become an electrician. It's the practical application of what he's been learning that gives him the confidence to move out on his own in his trade. Or maybe this example will help. Imagine that you've been training to rappel. Your instructor's the best the world has ever known. I mean, there's never been anybody as good as this guy. And he's covered all the different techniques with you. Countless times, he's covered all kinds of emergency type scenarios you might find yourself in. In fact, he's given you everything that you could possibly need to rappel anywhere in the world. And so you are excited. You feel like you can go and rappel. I mean, I got this. Damn. I can rappel with the best of them. You're confident. I mean, you're walking 2 feet taller. And then he takes you out to the Rocky Mountains, out to the toughest places that he knows of. And you're wondering, what's going on? And then he gets you out there and he says, "All right, Kevin, today, right here, right now, this place, you're going over the edge. And you know what, Kevin? You're going on your own. I'll see you down at the bottom. I'll be cheering you on all the way." All of a sudden, fear would grip you. Your knees begin to knock. Mine would. And you're just, you know, you're like immobilized for a second. But even though it seems impossible in that moment, because it's taller and higher than anything you've ever rappelled off of before, all of a sudden, you find yourself going over the edge. And you go over the edge because you trust in your trainer. You believe in what your trainer has taught you. And that's what is impelling you to go over the edge. And so now, think about your walk with Jesus. You know, in the same sense, we should be growing in our walk with Him. The spiritual disciplines, Bible study, meditation, service, you know, so many more. Those are the tools of our trade. All of them practiced under the covering of God's grace and His mercy. Those are the tools of our trade. We got to use them if we're going to be the person God's called us to be. Training with Jesus is necessary if we're going to become the kind of person who can do what He commanded, and we can do it easily, consistently, and automatically. And so, what mountain has He called you to rappel over? What is it? What are you trusting Him to do? Are you trusting Him? Are you trusting in His training? You know, if we're going to trust Him, then we've got to abide in Him. John talks about that, abiding in the vine, right? In other words, we got to make Him our home. We got to linger with Him. We got to let Him begin to really shape us. And if we can consistently do this, His presence is going to influence us. It's going to guide our actions. It'll happen. And I am telling you, I don't know about you, but I know about me. I want to be that kind of person. I do. I mean, when Jim Lewis is sifted out and all that's left is me just standing there and those rough edges have been knocked off of me. Man, I pray people say he had a heart after God. He loved Jesus. But even more than that, I want to hear, well done, Jim. Well done, my good and faithful servant. I'm not kidding, guys. If you can't tell, I want to hear that. And so here's the challenge for you and for me. Will we enter into His training? Will we do it? Will we do what it takes? Will you trust Him? Even though you don't understand what's going on around you. I know what's going on in some of your lives, and I know there's things that we don't even understand what in the world is happening. But will you trust Him? And will you trust Him completely? What is it right now that you're struggling to trust Him with? I put this together, and then Thursday, I had a situation come up, and I was like, oh man, what am I going to do? And then I had to reflect back on this. Who am I trusting in? Who am I trusting in? You know, what is it, health? Is it your health? That you need help trusting in Him? Is it your finances? Is it an addiction? What is it? And what would it look like in your life in a real way to act as if you trust Him? How can training, time in His Word, prayer, fellowship, service, meditation, those spiritual disciplines, how can they help you in your quest to trust Him with the real struggles that you have in your life? How can you get a fresh vision for training as it pertains to the real issues of your life? That's the question for us. Wrestle with that. I pray that you'd wrestle with that. I've wrestled with it this week. Wrestle with it. It's okay. And then let's live decided. And together, let's enter his training. And let's put our faith, and let's be obedient, and let's put it into action. Into action. That's the call for us today. Will you pray with me? Jesus, we do just, oh, we come to you and we love you. We want to serve you with all of our heart, all of our mind, all of our soul, all of our body, with our whole being. We want to serve you. Would you help us? I know that you will. We want to engage in that. We know we're not going to do it perfectly. We know that. But we don't want that to stop us from trying and to moving closer to you. Show us areas we need to trust you, Jesus. Empower us, just like you did your disciples, to move out. I know that you've called us to do that, and so we trust you. We trust you with our whole being. May you reign supreme in our lives. Would you just talk to God? Tell him what it is that you need to trust him in.